The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Got a good, sweet emotion about this coming on this interview we've got right now. It's Shasta Annon. I'm Nick Gardner. I'm coming to you live from downtown Reading, KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. We've got Shasta Annon here. They put out these videos that introduce you to people in our community. Some of them you might agree with, some of them you might not agree with. I'm going to let Shasta Annon go on and introduce himself right now.
So just to let everyone know, it's probably obvious to you, but I'm using a voice disguiser, and I probably sound like a surfer with a head cold, and so that's why. Wow. Hey, Nick, how's it going?
Things are great.
Well, so I'm on the show today because Nick Gardner sent me an email one day last week or so, and the email just said, I have a brilliant idea. And actually, the idea was kind of scary to me, but I kind of went with it, and I said I'd come on the show, and so I'm here today, so it's good to be with you.
The reason I came up with that idea is I wanted to get you as much exposure as we possibly can. Shasta Annon's going to be on here, and he encouraged his listeners to listen in, and I hope you are. Thank you so much. So, okay, Shasta Annon, what's the Annon for?
Wow, you're just jumping right into a tough question. Well, why don't I just tell people how I got into this, and I'll touch on I'm anonymous. Yeah, so It's actually kind of Kevin Cry's fault, to be honest with you, because I'll explain why.
Well, you know what that Kevin Cry did to me last week? He almost got me beat up in the chambers.
Oh, right. I know.
If anything happens, let's blame it on Kevin.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm kind of a smart aleck.
We're freewheeling here. It's okay. So the reason why I say that, and I say that jokingly, is because during the 2024 primary, I guess it was, a year and a half ago.
Yes.
Kevin, on his show, you know, at the same time your show is on, he had a debate between Patrick Jones and Matt Plummer. And so I listened in, and I was kind of interested because I didn't really know anything about Matt Plummer. I mean, I guess I literally did not know anything about Matt Plummer. And I wanted to see what he was all about. I didn't really have like strong opinions about him. I just thought he was sort of, supposedly he's Republican. I think he was at the debate for the Republican, Central Committee or whatever. But, you know, I knew who Patrick Jones was, obviously. So I listened in.
Well, you know, I was against Plummer simply because he came here for Bethel.
Well, see, I didn't know anything about that. And so what happened was I listened to that debate, and the whole time I just had this feeling in my gut. I'm like, who is this guy? You know, this guy, he said he's a conservative. Like, what the? I wasn't believing it at all. So I just couldn't shake this feeling. Like, I'm like doing the dishes and stuff. And I'm just thinking about this. It was really bothering me. So I went and I just started doing some research on Mr. Plummer, and needless to say, I have some skills in that area that I put them to use, and I was really surprised by what I saw, and I was like, I wanted to share the information, so I went ahead and I did the research. I put a 3-minute video out. I didn't know what the reaction would be. I mean, it did pretty well, but that's how I got started.
Let me interrupt here.
I have more information about Mr. Plummer, too. We can talk about it in a minute. But.
Okay, let me interrupt here. The only way to predict the future is by a person's past. And you putting out these videos that are fact-based on people's past, you know, this is what you're voting for. This you're being exposed to how the person really is. If you think Mary Rickard and Tim Garmon are Republicans, you're sadly mistaken. And that seems to be a big trick that people play on us. Let's move on. You know, the reason I figured that you would want to remain anonymous, and I would also if I was in your boots, is you wouldn't want a target on your back, for number one. Number two, you might have a business. You've got to stay apolitical. I know business people here in town that they can't afford to lose any more business. And, you know, I've lost business over my loud mouth when it comes to local politics. But, you know, I'm 76. I'm not going to starve to death. To heck with them. Well, I'm 75 almost. You know, I put it out there how I feel about things, and there's people that don't agree with me. Maybe quite a few. But anyway, let's go ahead and move on to this first clip. See,
let me just explain a while. I'm anonymous, just so people understand. And you touched on a little bit of it. I'll just briefly say that you know, when you take on a project like this, and you know, some of the people that I do my videos on are, you know, kind of powerful people, and other people are kind of like maybe unhinged, but I won't say who.
Sure.
But the thing is, when you take on a project like this, there's people in your life that are, you know, that are important to you, and they did not sign up for this.
That's right.
And they deserve to have their privacy, to be left out of this whole dumpster fire of drama. And the other thing is, you know, I'm just not really interested in, like, the attention and stuff. Like, I kind of just enjoy, I'm a little bit of an introvert, and I don't really want, I'm not like Pinkney or Benjamin Wayne, where I gotta stick a camera in my face every day and tell you how I feel about stuff. I do my research, I do my videos, and I'm hoping that they speak for themselves, that if people don't agree with what I'm doing, they can refute what my facts are and put their own stuff out. That's how I feel about it.
Well, you know, just like this radio show when we first started, I said, if you don't like what I'm saying, don't listen. I don't care.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Let's hit that first clip. This is Benjamin Nowain and his little wife, Jenny, and they need a lot of attention.
When you have nothing left to lose, what are you capable of? Benjamin Nowain was born in 1982. His father was Benny Nowain, who was born in Iran and grew up in a Jewish family. He came to America in 1960 and went to Chico State, where he played soccer. He was the longtime manager of Radio Shack in Reading, and in 1995, he started his own electronics store called Bentronics. Benjamin graduated from Foothill High School in 2000. He had a passion for the arts and attended community college in San Francisco, where he studied film. He continued his studies at Shasta College, where he acted in a number of plays, though his performances were not well reviewed. He tried his hand at becoming a filmmaker and put out a casting call in the Record Searchlight, but this ultimately came to nothing. It was around this time that Benjamin began a relationship with a local girl, Jenny O'Connell. Jenny was born in 1984. She grew up in Burnie, and her parents were Joy and Liam O'Connell. Joy was a social worker, and she spent her career with the county. In the 90s, she led workshops for prisoners at San Quentin, helping them get in touch with their feelings. Jenny's parents were both active in left-wing causes, and she says she attended her first protest when she was 3 years old. Jenny is Jewish on her mother's side, though during her childhood, she also attended a small Quaker church. The Quakers are pacifists with no particular theology. There are no pastors or preachers, only silent meditation, until someone feels compelled to speak and share their thoughts. Jenny was a shy child, though later in high school, she was active on the parliamentary procedure team. After graduation, Jenny says she considered attending film school, making her start on Broadway, or becoming a model, but ultimately decided to stay in Shasta County. When she was 19, she moved to Reading and began attending Bethel Church, after she witnessed their compassionate outreach to the homeless. Jenny was still politically active and attended an anti-war rally in 2007 while she was pregnant with her first child. Her relationship with the father didn't work out, and she found herself raising her child alone. It was around this time that she began a relationship with Benjamin. They welcomed a child in 2009 and married in 2012. And a year later, Ben began working for the county.
Well, I'll tell you what. Jenny isn't bashful anymore.
Oh.
You know, the thing is, the people are welcome to speak at the supervisors' meeting, to voice their opinion, hopefully on a civil level. But I've watched Benjamin and Jenny pick at Kevin Christ's business.
Right.
I've watched them go down and disrupt his coffees on Friday mornings when he's having them down at, I think it's the Kaleidoscope. And, you know, there's just things that are out of bounds, and they don't seem to know where those out of bounds are.
I think it's helpful to understand about them is that they're theater kids, if you understand what I mean by that. I mean, these are the kids in high school that were in theater kind of thing. And you know, and actually they do have some background in theater. Ben tried to do some theater, but it was not well reviewed. I guess that was in the clip, right?
Anyway,
but you know, they have like, this need inside of them for attention. Like, it's not about the issue itself or the actual thing being discussed. It's how do they fit into it? And they can't separate themselves from that to just talk about the issue itself.
I understand exactly what you're saying. If you watched Jenny last year on a couple of meetings, you can go to the archives and see how she acts. And watch how she's acting now. It's obvious that they're prepping for a lawsuit against the county.
Well, that's an interesting thought. What really interests me about the whole thing with them is that the argument on the left is that, well, so what if we're disrupting the meeting? You know, that people disrupted the meetings during the lockdowns. But if you think about it, it's a total difference there because the left, the No Wayans, plus those anarchist Palestinian protesters, you know, they want to shut the meeting down.
Sure.
To stop discussion. The folks that were the other folks during the COVID time were trying to get the board chambers open so they could have discussion. It's a completely separate, different dynamic and a different purpose.
That's absolutely right. Those Palestinians, those people in the black, they used profanity towards me when I walked by. I almost had to go get counseling.
Well, I bet you did.
You know, I'm trying to keep this moving along because we have a lot of clips, but you talk anytime you want. I think the next clip is, Nathan Pickney. He's I consider him a local rabble rouser around town here. Mm-hmm. Although I've got a cordial relationship with Nathan. And
you do, yeah.
I don't wish him any bad, but I don't agree with his stance on quite a few things. So let's hit it. Bam!
In 2020, Nathan traveled to Seattle, Washington to take part in the Capitol Hill organized protest known as CHOP. The Autonomous Zone was an anti-capitalist experiment in direct democracy. Nathan participated in the periphery of the protest, providing some drone surveillance to the CHOP security forces, as well as documenting the events on his YouTube channel, where he can be heard outside a police station chanting, "No justice, no peace. Take to the streets and F the police." CHOP would eventually end in violence, after 4 people were killed and numerous sexual assaults occurred. Nathan says on Facebook that he was shot at. Nathan first caught the attention of prominent local leftists in 2021 when he created parody videos mocking the Red, White, and Blueprint documentary series and the effort to recall Leonard Mone. All this came to a head one night when Nathan came up to Carlos Zapata and tried to goad Zapata into a fight. When Zapata waved his arm and knocked over a glass of water on Nathan, it set off a chain of events that would grip the community for months to come. This is a frequent tactic of Pinckney, who will often act provocatively and get into people's personal space to instigate a reaction and bring more views to his social media accounts. When they don't take the bait, it only makes him angrier. Nathan's attorney on the later court case was Lisa Jensen, who is now his fiancée.
You know, and Lisa's a pretty nice gal. She had her own problems. She got a DUI. She hit some guy on the sidewalk with her scooter and hurt him pretty bad.
And allegedly.
Allegedly.
But you don't want you to get in trouble, Nick.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, they seem to be cordial lately. In fact, the supervisors' meetings have calmed down considerably. And I don't know who we got for the next clip. Who is on the next clip?
Well, you know, Nick, there's some updates about Mr. Pinkney.
Go ahead. I'm ready.
It's been cordial because they don't show up to the meetings. But
oh, that's I right. Mean, there's a couple well, of restraining I mean, orders whole, against
yeah,
him.
Yeah, there might be like a carve-out for that purpose. I'm not sure. But, you know, recently, Mr. Pinkney did have, he was kind of on a redemption arc, I call it, because he was trying to like, hey, you know what, I'm going to reach out to people. He made a Facebook group called like the Real Reading Patriots or whatever. And he was trying to like, all right, this is going to be a space for the Trump supporter MAGA folks and for the lefties and whatever they may be. They like have a conversation and talk, but no conservatives really joined in because like who's going to, no one trusts Mr. Pinkney to really do what he says in that regard. What happened not long ago is he got kicked off of Facebook permanently.
Oh, geez.
I'm not 100% sure what he posted to get himself kicked off. I will say around the same time, he was posting some really rough material on MAGA people, and he was wishing, well, I don't want to say what he was saying, but he was saying things that would get you kicked off of Facebook in regards to MAGA people. So he got kicked off of Facebook for whatever reason. He'll say it's because, I don't know, he has some other explanation, but he also got kicked off of TikTok, if you can believe it or not. Like, who gets kicked off of TikTok? I mean, that's like anything goes on TikTok, but he says it's because he's been talking about, like, the Epstein stuff. And then, you know, the powers that be, you know, shut him down because of that. But Lisa Jensen on her TikTok talks about it every day, all day long. So I'm not really sure that really makes sense. So at the moment, he's only on YouTube and Blue Sky pretty much. So he doesn't really have a platform at the moment. He's going to have to go out on the corner with the cardboard sign and start yelling or something.
I know a gal at the supervisors meetings that might join him.
Yeah. Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
I think there's some anger management that needs to be dished out to a few of those people. You know,
well, you know, something else to talk about, because I'm pretty sure I know the clip you played, but I couldn't hear it, of course. But the thing about Nathan and some of the other people on the left, on the far left anyway, is, you know, they try to shame MAGA people to say, like, oh, you don't support the Constitution, you don't support democracy, and all this stuff. And the whole thing is just so dumb, because, I mean, Mr. Pinkney, his ideal world would be, you know, no capitalism. It'd be like that. It'd be like the situation in Seattle. Like, he literally traveled to Seattle to join this. Well, I mean, literally, it is an insurrection. Let's be honest, like an actual insurrection, because you're literally separating from the United States of America, and he goes to join this thing, and if you go on YouTube and watch his documentary he did on his experiences there, and he's really having a great time, and the whole place is just so run down and it's a mess, and it's just like, why would anybody want to live here? But
well, you know what the thing is, what we have here in River City is all we have is a left-leaning news media. I really appreciated right. The video you did on a Reading Record Searchlight. That pretty much good. Spelled it out. I understood, you know, how leftist a news cafe has been. Twist words and make no mistake, when somebody deliberately deceives you, they're lying to you. And I get the biggest kick out of Donnie Chamberlain. She claims she's been assaulted, even by a sheriff's deputy there at the chambers.
Right.
And you know,
yeah, the lanyard gate from a year and a half ago, right?
Oh gosh, she
said someone yanked her lanyard. I won't say.
Oh, yeah, that was one of the other hosts on a broadcast. But you know, yeah. I never talked to him, but I suspect he was trying to just get her phone out of her hands and get rid of her, and she happened to have a lanyx around her neck, and he gave it
and
a jerk.
And then she wore that neck brace for like a couple weeks. You know, it's like
I heard that the person she borrowed it from had wanted it back, and she didn't want to give it back. I just made that up.
You know, I appreciate you bringing up that Record Searchlight video. I was really proud of that one. I know it's not the kind of video that's going to garner a lot of attention because it's not very, the topic is not very exciting. But I really enjoyed digging into the details of, you know, going all the way back to the history and stuff. And I just looked at all the archives, and what I found was really interesting because I didn't realize that, I mean, I knew that not a lot of people were reading the Record Searchlight, but I had no idea how bad it was, because what happens is they don't advertise this or tell you about it, but every year the Record Searchlight has to publish in the print edition their statistics for the year. It has to do with it's a law, it's been around around for like 100 years. So you can, I went all the, even all the way back to 1938 or 1940 something. You can see the statistics, their circulation. So their circulation at the moment is very, it's a couple thousand people. I mean, there's a small chance that maybe they didn't do the reporting correctly and maybe they didn't include their digital subscribers, but I kind of doubt it. That's why I use that song at the end of the video. I had originally planned to use that, but after I'd done my research, I used the Don't Fear the Reaper song. And I'm like, you know, these guys, they don't know much. They're not going to be around much longer. And I was a little mean. I called the video, what was the record searchlight?
I agree with you. I don't think they'll be around much longer either. I said on my show two or three weeks ago that I read the paper, the email, the video copy, and there was one local article in it, and that was the weather report. And, you know, there's that's the truth, and there's only three or four articles that are local in it, not counting the sports. And, you know, they have some high school scores and stuff in there.
It's sad because
a hometown paper is important.
Yeah, and they used to actually reflect the community they lived in. I honestly believe that, like, when the community was a little bit more liberal during the Shasta Dam period, I mean, the paper was a little bit more liberal. And then in the 60s and 70s, when we had the rightward turn, the paper was more conservative. But then now it's the opposite. They're pushing this liberal stuff on a conservative community. Or else, maybe the better explanation is that the only people reading the paper are mostly liberal, so they're just kind of leaning into that and pushing and giving their readers they have left what they want. I don't know how to look at it.
I can see which way the wind's blowing for them.
Absolutely. There's a, they call it credentialism. They can't just, you know, make up their own mind based on their own life experiences, their own research, their own reading. But actually, that brings me to the topic of citizen journalism, which someone asked that I bring up. I want to touch on that real quick.
Go.
Because, so the concept of citizen journalism is journalism done by citizens as opposed to professional journalists, which I define as someone who went to journalism school, right? And if you use my definition, which I think is a good definition, Donnie is a journalist, you know. The people at the Record Searchlight are journalists, but, you know, Annalise Pierce did not go to journalism school, and neither did Mr. No Way, obviously. So I would actually categorize them as community journalists, but they would really not care for that term at all. But I think professional journalism has failed us, and I don't see a problem with people. The thing is, the research is all there. Like, for myself, everything I do, I use its court documents. Documents, newspaper articles, old blog posts. It's stuff that's all out in the open that you can go and just determine for yourself. I very rarely get any, you know, tips, you know, kind of thing.
The thing is, when you're saying things like that, publishing things like you are, me on here, you try and be accurate. That's what's most important. Honesty, integrity, and accuracy. And if you lose that, you're not going to have an audience.
No, so that's absolutely correct, Nick, because I was talking to Dave about that. I said, you know, the thing about being anonymous like myself, and actually, if you like the technical, I'm pseudonymous. The thing about that is you live and die on your reputation.
Yes.
Because it's not about who you are or where you work or where you go to church or what grocery store or what baseball team you like. You know, no one has anything to attach on to you except what your research has. And the thing is, I'm very fastidious about my facts and my piece. You know, people could disagree how I piece them together and then the conclusions I come to. But the thing is, at the end of the day, if I purposely lie or am I accurate, you know, I better answer to someone on Judgment Day about that. And I'm more worried about that than I am about any of the lefties.
Absolutely. Hey, we've got to take a break. I guess we'll take a break right now and we'll come back with Donnie Greenberg. So we'll do the break right now.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243 CT Reading.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
When you have a workers' compensation case, the insurance companies and adjusters are not on your side. Speak with an attorney to be sure you're not missing out on the benefits that you need and are entitled to. Workers' compensation is complicated. Gorman Law can help you turn a bad situation into a new opportunity. Call us at 530-262-2168, 530-262-2168, or schedule a free consultation online at GormanCompLaw.com.
If you're 50 years or older, come down to Wind River Resort and Casino for our Senior Day promotion every Wednesday.
Play with your River Club card on any of our favorite slot machines and receive 5 times points from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Don't forget to claim your bonus points at any of our promotional kiosks before you leave.
While you're in points, you can put your points back on your slot machine for more playtime or redeem your points for dining vouchers, gas vouchers, or a variety of other prizes at the River Club.
For more information, visit WindRiver.com or call 1-800-280-YOU-WIN.
Find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Got a good clip that's going to play right into what we were just talking about.
That breaking point came in May of 2020, 2 months into the COVID lockdowns. An admitted germaphobe, Donnie followed every COVID protocol and mandate to a T. When she saw District 5 supervisor Les Baugh break the rules and get a haircut, something inside her snapped. She wrote a scathing takedown of Baugh that would become the model of a news cafe post from that day forward. In May of 2020, Donnie tried to get Sheriff Magrini canceled for allowing a Mother's Day rodeo. She predicted there would be a surge in COVID deaths, but this never happened. Only a few weeks later, there was a protest in Reading over the death of George Floyd. But she had no concerns that this large gathering would become a super spreader event. In July of 2020, Donnie tried to get Bethel musician Sean Foyt canceled for having the audacity to hold a worship service at the Sundial Bridge, calling him a plague rat for following the directives of God to gather in worship. Soon after, Donnie wrote her most infamous post, titled, "Dear Governor Newsom, we've got trouble right here in River City." In that post, she begged the governor to use the power of the state to punish the average citizens of Shasta County that in her mind were not taking COVID seriously. All this makes perfect sense when you understand Donnie's politics. Donnie, who voted for Bernie Sanders in 2016, supports gay marriage, free college tuition, universal health care, and decriminalizing drug use. Like many on the far left, she is a victim of her own conspiratorial mindset. She will often find bizarre connections between local conservative activists and the far, far right. One example is when she linked the Recall Modi movement with QAnon because she said their logo looked like a Q. In another instance, she compared the Proud Boys, who showed up to Carlos Zapata's trial in 2021, to the KKK, a white supremacist organization. This is an odd statement to make, given that both the Proud Boys leader Enrique Tarrio and Carlos Zapata are Latino. Donnie also has a long history of bad predictions. She predicted the Red, White, and Blueprint series would never finish, though it went on to produce 8 episodes with thousands of views each. She also predicted that the Recall Modi group wouldn't be able to gather enough signatures to put the recall on the ballot. It not only made it to the ballot, but was successful by a clear majority. More recently, she predicted the effort to recall Kevin Cry would be a resounding success, but it failed. She makes so many bad predictions because she is out of touch with the regular citizens of Shasta County. Donnie and the writers at A News Cafe believe they know better than the ignorant masses how Shasta County should be run. To them, anyone who wants Christianity to play a more prominent role in civic life is a Christian nationalist. Someone who takes the Constitution of the United States seriously is a rabid constitutionalist. Any member of a militia is a domestic terrorist, and anyone who cares about election integrity is an election denier.
We're going to jump up and talk about Matt Plummer. We've got a clip from Matt Plummer, and then we've got an Alan Long clip. And remember, if you'd have known this about them, wonder to yourself, would you have voted for these guys? You know, just one more vote. These guys can control the county, just one more seat up there. And that is why it's so important for me to get these videos out to make people aware of who they're voting for. So I'm stressing you to send this to all your email friends. So let's go.
Who knew that in sleepy little Shasta County, globalists are trying to take over? Matt Plummer, native of Califon, New Jersey, about an hour from Manhattan, graduate of Yale University. Plummer spent 6 years at the Bridge Span Group, an offshoot of Bain Capital, Mitt Romney's company. The Bridge Span Group is a nonprofit consulting firm whose clients include the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Group, Planned Parenthood, and the George Soros Open Society Foundations. The stated goal of the Bridge Span Group is to make these left-wing nonprofits more effective in their attempts to enact social change. During his time with the Bridge Span Group, Plummer co-authored a number of articles, including one in the Stanford Social Innovation Review called How Field Catalysts Galvanize Social Change. In that article, he writes about how NGOs have led the way in making same-sex marriage more acceptable in America. Plummer also maintained an active Twitter account where he retweeted and praised the World Economic Forum and Rhino Paul Ryan. In 2016, Plummer made a fateful decision. He admired how Bethel Church was using its influence to create social change in Redding, California. Within a year, he would move his family here and start his own consulting company, Zervana. Zervana offers strategies and how-to videos teaching organizations how to be more effective. One of his clients was the church he came to Redding to be a part of, Bethel.
Matt Plummer, all he's ever done, in my opinion, is consulting work. We need somebody in there that has life experiences. If you take a look at the makeup of the board right now, you've got three working people, Kevin Cry, Chris Kellstrom, and Corky Harmon. And then the other two, have fed at somebody else's pot, usually the government's pot. I guess, Matt, he's probably, I'm guessing, is Bethel's pot. And, you know, we need people that have life experiences getting in there, running our county the way we, the taxpayers, want our county run. And we're approaching that right now. What's your thoughts on Matt Plummer as a supervisor? You know, one black mark against him before you get going. He nominated Alan Long to be chair, and he hadn't even been a supervisor for 20 minutes. Now, how does that work?
Did you notice how brazen they were at that first board meeting? They were just letting it all out there. Mr. Long was particularly brazen. I feel like after the video on him came out, he kind of calmed down a little bit. And also, I noticed that right after the video came out, that board supervisors meeting that was directly after that, you know, the board confronted him about his wife and the fact that she's on the RCRC thing. Yeah. She's a county council for a number of small counties up here. But anyway, regarding Mr. Plummer, I mean, what you said about life experience is interesting because until recently, I'm not sure he actually ever, had a mortgage, owned a house, you know, for what it's worth. I mean, not that, I mean, it's more to life than having a mortgage owning your house, but that there is a certain bread and butter understanding of day-to-day life that you get by having that type of responsibility. But something about him that's interesting is, I didn't notice this, I think it happened right after my video came out, is that I looked at his financials, that he actually received money from PG&E.
I'll be darned.
You believe that? It wasn't a huge sum of money, but I was really surprised by that. And as far as I can tell, no one else has received money from PG&E at all. I did a search. No one has received money from PG&E except Matt Plummer. And can you imagine any scenario where Kevin Cry, Chris Kellstrom, or Corky Harmon would take money from PG&E?
No, I can't.
I'm just speculating here. I think PG&E gave him some money and they wanted to see what would happen. Like, is a trial balloon? Like, would he accept the money or would he just refuse it outright and say no? They wanted to kind of see where where he would land on that. Well, he took the money, as far as I can tell. If he, well, no, he took the money. There's no evidence that he returned it. And I think that makes it, I think that's interesting in light of the fact that, do you remember when Governor Newsom was up here and he gave a speech and, you know, the only elected official, the only supervisor in our area that was there was Matt Plummer, and he was standing right behind him.
Yes.
You know, Newsom received over like $200,000 from PG&E in his last campaign. What about Matt Plummer? Made PG&E say, hey, we're going to reach out to this guy. What made the governor's office say, you know, out of everyone in Shasta County, we're going to reach out to this guy and have him show up behind us, you know?
Well, you know, one thing I notice about well-educated people, and Matt Plummer and Alan Long are well-educated, it seems to me like they're good excuse makers. I think anything you proposed with them, they'd have a good excuse whether it should fly or whether it shouldn't fly. And that goes back to their arrogance when they tried to push Alan Long into the chair seat. They had quite an argument, but they didn't have a leg to stand on. No experience.
No.
And boy, that would have been a catastrophe for Shasta County, in my opinion.
You're probably going to play some clips on Mr. Long, so I maybe I'll save any comments I have for after that. But
well, you know,
he doesn't want to say about Mr. Long.
You know, my stance on the vapor trails that go from horizon to horizon is that they are chemtrails. Now, what do they call them? Geoengineering trails. You all know what I'm talking about. Those clouds.
They say they're contrails. That's the, although you're talking about, it depends on who you're talking about. If you're talking about the people who dispute it, they say, oh, it's just contrails from commercial airplanes, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, if it was a real contrail, it would dissipate within
about
90 seconds.
Yeah. But it wouldn't be this crisscross pattern in the sky. It's kind of.
But I've got a clip of Alan Long and Carl Bott talking right here in the studio last Thursday, I think it was. And I want you to hear his arrogance when it comes to discussing them. Are you ready with that clip, Dave? You got it. Let's pop it.
About some agendized items that I don't think are relevant to our community and trying to better our community. So I'm trying.
Can you give us an example of that?
Chemical trails. So
you don't talk about chemtrails?
Yes. Yes, we agendized that, and we had a full presentation.
You did.
We spent a considerable amount of time, and that agitates people. And the thing is, who knows if they're true or not? I don't want to weigh into that, but is that really?
Well, I'd be happy to, but I'm not.
is that really within our jurisdiction, and is it something we could change? And let's just say we were able to substantiate it was true, which we won't be able to. We
Good
never
luck.
Will.
Good
and then
luck.
what would we do about it? It's not a local problem. So
yeah.
that's my goal, is to shorten the meetings back to business only in the stay in our lane in the jurisdiction that we have some control over and decision making. Let's stay in that, because there's so many issues that are really important to our community.
Absolutely.
Right now. And let's focus on those. Let's not get distracted with all the side show.
Kim Trails, I forgot about that one. But I thought
you asked for an example.
Oh, that's a great example.
You hear the arrogance in both of them on that we're a bunch of Looney Tunes. But you know, we're the first ones that got rid of Dominion. We started the conversation going when the chemtrails were brought up and Dane Wigington gave a presentation. It all started with Kevin Cry having a talk with a doctor that said we had an unusual large amount of certain cancers in young people that could be attributed to it. And, you know, it wasn't a lengthy conversation. I think Dane had 9 minutes, and then the idiots, the failed recall people...
It was minimal,
It was less than a half hour, 45 minutes. And I detect arrogance in there. And go ahead.
Well, the thing about that bothers me is that people on the left, and I include Mr. Plummer and Mr. Long on this, is that they, because of their credentialism, they don't accept that anything can be true unless there's some non-profit funded study or some official proof that has told them that it's true. You know, they've lost touch with their own gut instinct and gut sense that tells them, you know, their own senses that tell them that there's something off here. And I think you ignore that kind of stuff at your peril personally.
You know, you hit the hammer right on the nail head. If it isn't scientifically proven to them through their lack of education, although they're overeducated, it just can't be. And, you know, I get a kick out of these people that say, the science is settled. Science is never settled.
Never, never settled.
And I've seen too many examples of these chemtrails to think that they don't exist. And, in fact, the government has admitted that they exist. They just won't tell us what they're doing. But let's go ahead and hit the unless you got something to say, we could hit the car crash.
Go ahead.
Let's hit the car crash with Alan Long. I think he could use some driving lessons from Doug Jenke. Here we go.
Can you ever really know what lies in the heart of an elected official? Alan Long was born in Illinois in 1960. When Alan was a young boy, his family moved to Palo Alto in the Bay Area. He had an idyllic childhood with safe neighborhoods, good schools, and a job working as a paperboy. Long attended Palo Alto High School. One of his fellow classmates was Tom Himes. The two graduated in 1978 and attended the same community college, where Tom finished his first semester on the honor roll with plans to attend Stanford. Another fellow freshman was George Tan. George was a committed Christian and active in the life of his church. The future looked bright for the three freshmen, and it seemed as if they had the whole world ahead of them. But all of that would change in an instant. On the night of January 12, 1979, Long was driving with Tom, who was in the back seat, and George, who was in the front. Long was driving fast, and when he rounded a curve, he crossed over the center divider and into the path of a pickup truck. George Tan was killed instantly, while Tom Himes, who was pinned in the back seat, died hours later at the hospital. Long was thrown from the car and somehow survived, with only a few cuts and bruises. Funerals were held for George and Tom a few days later, and they were both interred at Alta Mesa Cemetery in Palo Alto.
Boy, I'd have a hard time living with that. That's certainly a lack of judgment.
The overriding feeling I had when I couldn't believe when I found that out, I almost fell out of my chair. And I was like, my God, like, what in the world? And then he goes off to Berkeley. I would have joined a monastery or something and just reevaluated my entire life. I mean,
instead, he joined the police department and they gave him a gun. And, yeah, you know, I encourage the audience to go to your search engine and type in Shasta Anon and find the Alan Long video and listen to the whole thing. He had a little confrontation with some teenagers up here where he's having a house built. I think it was out Placer Road quite a bit.
Yeah, he overdid it.
In my opinion, he did. These teenagers, now evidently somebody was vandalizing some of the construction materials and
stuff. Yeah, I mean, they weren't blameless, but I don't know if it was pull a gun out and...
Well, he come flying out from behind the building with a gun and threatened them and kicked one in the tummy so hard that he had to go to the hospital. Two of them went to the hospital, and it just seems like it was a little overkill to me.
And that thing about kicking in the stomach, that was something that both accounts said, the kids and Mr. Long. There's no dispute on that part of it.
Well, the thing he's a sheriff. He should have had it set up to where the cops would be there in about 5 minutes, and he just held them. It sounded to me like he enjoyed his authority over these teenage kids.
You know, I mean, I can't speculate on that, but I'll say that I got the same feeling when I heard Mr. Wong's rendition of what happened. I got the same feeling as I did when I was reading the court documents. Well, I don't want to get into his marriage and stuff, but I just feel like he made this whole story with these truths. Well, maybe that absolutely happened, but he said that there was some tools, like a hammer that got stolen, and he thought maybe all they had a hammer, so they must have been all armed or something, and that's why he came flying out with his gun drawn. But I don't know, that just seemed a little far-fetched to me, but it could absolutely be true. I have no idea.
That's right. So we've got one more clip on him. I hope we have time to play it. But
you know what else bothers me about that about the car accident thing? Why am I the one that's reporting this? Why is some guy on YouTube the one reporting this? It's just ludicrous to me. Why wasn't that?
It seems like some of the things in his past he didn't want brought up, and that's why he had about a 3.5-week campaign before the election.
That's the thing. I spent more time researching a video than he did campaigning.
Yes.
Because, and to find, and I could go into all the details and how I found out about the accident, how I was able to confirm it was absolutely him. But if I should go on the next clip.
Okay, how many videos do you have out?
Over 15, I think, at this point.
They're all local people here. And
it's all local. I only do public figures. I do politicians. I do media people. I do activists, people in the public activists and things.
Sure.
I'm only interested in doing local stuff. I think locally is where you have any,
well,
any
yes.
power at all.
If we're going to take our government back, which Trump's doing a very good job of, we need a good foundation, and your foundation starts with your cities and your counties.
Absolutely.
And we're lining up a pretty good foundation of a good, honest government that represents the people. I'm tired of these people that get in office and tell us what to do. We should be telling our representatives what we want.
People don't have any patience anymore for hiding stuff. They want total transparency. That's the mood right now, and I hope that continues.
I do, too. That's all. You know, all we want, really, is honest elections. We want transparent, honest elections. And mm-hmm. I know that the conservatives can live with the results, maybe with a sour taste in their mouth, as long as they're honest.
Yeah.
But I don't believe we've had honest elections. What's your feeling about the elections locally?
I feel like there's funny stuff going on, or in the past anyway. I have no insight on what it exactly is. There's people much smarter than me that can tell you, that can walk you through the math and things like that. I will say that there's a lot of things that bother me. For example, in my current video, which hopefully will be out by the time this interview is aired, I'm doing a piece about Stephanie Bridget and Eric Jensen and the campaign and Patrick Jones's whistleblower complaint.
Good.
On what happened.
That'll be interesting.
It's I'm well along. It's very detailed. It gets into all the details. But you know, the thing about that 2022 election that really bothers me is, you know, you have this pattern now that's really disturbing, that people go and they vote in person and Eric Jensen's winning. You know, the precinct tallies say, oh, he's the conservatives are winning. And then the mail-in ballots come flooding in and then you get a whole different story. But there's only people that can explain these things a lot better than me. My gut tells me something's funny going on, but I just report what I can. I don't speculate.
You've got a video out on Joanna Francesca that is very interesting. We're going to do this last clip. I think it's 5 minutes, so we'll have a minute before the show ends. You ready there, Dave? He's not quite ready, but he's getting ready. This has really gone by this hour, and I hope to get you back on in the future.
Yeah, maybe we will, yeah.
We'll see what people I talk to have to say. I'm sure they're going to want to hear more. We got enough for a two-hour show right now, so let's hit that.
Many of Long's positions went against the majority of Shasta County voters. Long was opposed to Measure C, setting term limits for supervisors, as well as Measure D, making Shasta County a charter county. Both measures were passed overwhelmingly by voters. Long was opposed to removing impact fees, which unfairly burden homeowners. He was also against terminating the county's contract with Dominion Voting Systems and wants to disband the Election Commission, decreasing transparency. Questions also arose over the influence of his wife, Margaret. She has her own law firm, Prentice Long, which represents a number of North State counties. And Margaret herself serves as the county counsel for Tehama, Modoc, and Trinity counties. Margaret's law firm was also a beneficiary of Long's campaign. Long paid his wife's firm over $12,000. Prentice Long has also come under scrutiny in the past when a grand jury report found that they benefited financially from a poor decision made by the Trinity County Board of Supervisors under Margaret's advisement to not accept a settlement offer in a cannabis lawsuit. The ongoing litigation that followed ended up costing the county 10 times what the original settlement was for, and Prentice Long was able to log substantial billable hours. Prentice Long's influence runs deep in the North State. Both Margaret and her associate attorney, Carolyn Walker, are married to supervisors in Shasta and Tehama County. Additionally, current Shasta County Counsel Joseph Larmer is a former employee of Margaret's firm. On the night of the March 5th election, Long was well in the lead with 55% of the vote, in a result that confounded both the left and the right.
I would like to hear from somebody, sometime, someday, how Mr. Long got in. I mean, to me, it's still perplexing. But nobody that comes out of here, yeah, he was a cop, and you know, a lot of his stands were very, very, very liberal. His positioning on the machines, his friendships with Leonard Modi, and you're trying to say that a conservative district voted for that guy?
Long's lead dropped as the weeks went by, and it was not clear if he would retain enough votes to avoid a runoff in November. As it turned out, he would escape a runoff with second-place challenger Laura Hobbs by only 14 votes. Hobbs contested the results of the election in court, but the hearing was delayed because Long evaded service. Sheriff's deputies tried twice to serve him at his home and left their card, but Long never made contact. It was not until a month later that he was finally served, leading to calls of cowardice among some in the community.
He's refusing to accept service. He's law enforcement and he knows the process. I'm really concerned. If he's not willing to face this, I'm really concerned that if he actually gets seated, I'm just wondering his honor and integrity in any difficult matter.
As it turned out, the ROV's office placed Long's name first on the ballot when it was supposed to be Laura Hobbs, a mistake that went against California election law in which the ROV's office had to publicly admit fault. But this was not enough to convince the judge, who eventually ruled against Hobbs. Many questions still remain. How did someone who only campaigned for a few weeks, had to loan himself thousands of dollars, only attended a single debate, and had little popular support in the form of small donors and other typical indicators, go on to win the primary in a blowout?
So, there you have. Let's see. Laura Hobbs got cheated, in my opinion. The judge should have ordered a runoff between Alan Long and Laura Hobbs. The vote was split with Laura. There was two other candidates, and she would have had a lot more votes without him. I'm going to let you finish up, Shasta Anon, and thanks for coming on, buddy. Mucho grande. Really appreciate it.
Well, I guess I'll just say, hey, if you like what you listen, what you heard today, and you just want, if you really appreciate like deep research into local topics that are sometimes serious, sometimes fun, go ahead and you go to Rumble or YouTube and just type in Shasta Anon, all one word, Shasta Anon. Do me a favor and follow my channel and like and pass the videos around. Thank you.
That's a big thing. Get these videos out to people. Wake people up that you need to get involved with our local government and choose your candidates, who you vote for carefully.
Well, I just think that Mr. Long is an interesting person. There's a lot there to talk about with him. And you know, there's kind of a darkness. And I just could feel it in my being as I'm covering some of this stuff. And I don't really understand what made him want to run, to be honest with you. He says that he wanted to run because the meetings were becoming too chaotic and things like that, but he literally never attended a single meeting until the election was over, and then he started attending a few. I asked around, and I asked people, did he ever attend? And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, where do you get all the way for it? Like, I mean, there's the arrogance thing that you mentioned before. Like, why do you think that you have what it takes, given your background and your history and everything that's gone on, that you should be in that position?
Well, I agree with you. I think that just about eats up the show. Tune in two more weeks, and we'll be back on Kevin Kreis on next month, next week. Kevin always has a great show. Yesterday's show, or last week's show, was very good with Kevin. And we both enjoy doing these broadcasts. Doug Jenke will be back in 2 weeks. So that's it.
Put a candle in the window. But I feel I've got to move. Oh, I'm gone. Long as I can see the light.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.